Thank you, Mr. Merrill. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next in number 87-1945, William A. Frazee versus the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Bench, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, does the Free Exercise Clause extend protection only to persons who are members of established religious organizations and who exercise the beliefs of those organizations? That's the issue this case presents. William A. Frazee believes it's wrong to perform non-essential work on Sunday. His beliefs are based on his religious convictions as a Christian. Now, non-essential to Mr. Frazee means any work that does not directly relate to the preservation of human life. In 1984, he worked for the state of Illinois and was laid off. And during that time, he remained on call to return to his position. In addition, he performed temporary employment through Kelly Services Incorporated and performed all assignments that were given to him until April of 1984.
Did he have very many?
Well, the record shows that he testified during the hearing that he had one assignment previous to the job that came up in April of 1984, and then there was one afterwards. So, in fact, he had two assignments. On April of 1984, he was given an offer of a five-day position beginning, he was told, Wednesday, May 9th, and going through Sunday, May 13, 1984. The position was a retail clothing position, salesman. When he was informed that the work included Sunday work, he inquired as to whether the work could be limited from Wednesday through Saturday, and was informed that unless he was available for Sunday work, he wouldn't be considered for the position. At that time, he declined the employment, citing his religious belief against Sunday labor. Now, after that, Mr. Frazee attempted to obtain continuing unemployment benefits from the Department of Employment Security. During the proceedings, he at all times acted pro se. The Illinois statute that we have before the Court today is very similar to the statutes that this Court considered in the Sherbert and the Thomas cases. In order to remain eligible for unemployment benefits under the Illinois statute, a person must not refuse an offer of suitable work without good cause. It's almost the exact language of the statute in Thomas.
Mr. French, I'm afraid we're going to have a very disappointing argument here today. As I read the briefs, I'm not sure your opponent wants to argue about the question as you so well expressed it. You did indeed express the question that was presented in the petition for cert at the outset of your brief, whether you have to be a member of an organized religion in order to claim the benefit of these cases. But as I understand the position being taken here by the appellees, they concede that point. And all they want to argue about is whether indeed your client adequately established the sincerity of his religious conviction as opposed to whether it was part of an organized religion or not.
That's correct, Justice Scalia. I'd make two points in response to that. First of all, this is the first time the Department has raised this issue. Throughout the lower court proceedings, they urged the lower courts to take the position that the Illinois Appellate Court ultimately took, first of all. And secondly, I would say, and I'd like to address this more completely as I get into the argument, but for now I would say that their position both mischaracterizes the record in this case and confuses the issues of fact and law that are before this Court for determination. But that's the short answer to your question, and I'd like to explore it more further.
I would hate to think we took this case just to decide whether your client proved with adequate force the sincerity of his conviction. That's really not the kind of issue we usually take up here, is it?
That's right. But I would say that, first of all, there's no, and I'll reach that directly, the fact of the matter is that this Court would not have to overturn any factual determination that was made by the administrative agency in order to overturn the decision of the Illinois Appellate Court. The agency and the Illinois Appellate Court both made clear that Mr. Frazee's beliefs were religious in nature and that they were sincere. And I'll demonstrate that as we proceed. And that gets directly to the point that throughout the administrative proceedings, Mr. Frazee's sincerity was never questioned. In this case, in the first person that he presented his claim to under the statute was the claims adjudicator. And that claims adjudicator made this express finding that was a determination he was required to make under the Illinois statute. Quote, on April 30, 1984, the claimant refused an offer of work with Kelly Services Incorporated because he did not want to work on Sunday due to his religious conviction. Claims adjudicator didn't have any problem identifying Mr. Frazee's beliefs as being religiously based. And when Mr. Frazee's claim was rejected by that claims adjudicator, he appealed to the referee and had a hearing before the referee. The referee affirmed the decision of the claims adjudicator on all issues. And at that hearing, Mr. Frazee responded to the questions of the referee without benefit of counsel. Now, the transcript will show that the referee wasn't concerned about Mr. Frazee's sincerity at all. He was only concerned about two issues. First, whether Mr. Frazee was a member of an established religious organization, and secondly, whether he was exercising the beliefs of an established religious organization. That was the entire focus of the referee's questioning during the hearing about Mr. Frazee's religious beliefs. When that when the referee upheld the decision of the claims adjudicator, Mr. Frazee appealed to the Board of Review, and once again his sincerity was not at issue. The board specifically ruled that Mr. Frazee's beliefs were not protected, no matter how strong or sincerely held. And I'd emphasize here that what the board had in front of it at the time it made its determination was more than just the testimony that Mr. Frazee presented at the hearing. It had two written statements that Mr. Frazee presented during the course of the administrative proceedings. And contrary to the claims of the department here, what that evidence showed is a lot more than Mr. Frazee just saying, I'm a Christian and I can't work on Sunday. In fact, the two written statements showed that his beliefs were derived from his own personal reading of the Bible, relying first on the commandments contained in the Decalogue and secondly on the actions of Christ in the New Testament. So there's no question.
It is true that the Board of Review ended up its opinion saying, however, other than his own self-serving testimony, the claimant has presented no corroborative evidence to establish that working on a Sunday was unsuitable for him.
That's correct, Justice Stevens, and actually that's kind of a puzzling statement until I think when you read it in context, what it's referring to, when they're saying he didn't produce any evidence corroborating his beliefs, it's referring the corroboration that they were asking for and were looking for was that the corroboration of an established religious organization, that tenet was found in an established religious organization, didn't refer specifically to the evidence he was presenting. In my judgment, I think that's the fair reading of the decision. Or otherwise, if in fact that was the basis of the board's decision, there would have been no need for the board to say whatsoever that in order to for a claimant to get the protection of the First Amendment, that you have to show that you're a member of a denomination or church organization. And they made that ruling specifically and expressly, that when a refusal to work is based on religious convictions, it must be based solely on the fact that the person is exercising the beliefs of an established religious organization. So I think when read properly in context, what that statement by the board is referring to is the fact that Mr. Frazee didn't establish that he was exercising the belief of an established religious organization. But this was the evidence that I've mentioned, the evidence contained in the transcript and the two written statements of Mr. Frazee is what the board had in front of it when it passed on Mr. Frazee's beliefs. And certainly the Board of Review didn't have any problem identifying the religious basis of Mr. Frazee's beliefs. It termed them religious convictions. The sole ground for denial, as I mentioned, was that Mr. Frazee did not show that he was exercising a belief of an established religious organization.
We'll resume there at 1 o'clock, Mr. Frazee.
Thank you.
Mr. French, you may resume your argument.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Justice Scalia, excuse me, I'd like to just respond a little more fully to your question about what the issue in this case is. I'm not so sure that the department here has conceded for the purpose of this oral argument that the position of the Illinois Appellate Court was wrong. In their motion to dismiss or affirm, the department took the position on the question presented as follows, whether a state agency violates the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment by denying an individual unemployment benefits due to his refusal to work on a Sunday when that refusal is not based upon any specific religious or church tenet, but rather upon his allegation of a personal feeling that as a Christian it was wrong for him to work on Sundays. Now, the first time that the department had changed the focus of its argument at all in this case was after we submitted our brief on the merits. But I'm not so sure, even in their brief on the merits, that they've taken the position that they've conceded that the test adopted by the Illinois Appellate Court is wrong. On page 20 of their brief, they say Congress cannot know and the courts cannot measure a statute's impact on religion unless the salient points of the religion are objectively measurable. The need to identify some tangible evidence of a religion and its beliefs leads both courts and legislative bodies into invoking dogma and tenets as a shorthand way to measure the breadth and scope of religious beliefs. I'd like to know myself from the department whether they are defending, in fact, the test adopted by the Illinois court, and if so, what the basis of that is, because I don't think it's contained in their brief.
Let me ask about your position. You would not have any problem with a state saying one of the indicia of sincerity is that you belong to a religious group which, as a whole, supports this position dogmatically.
That's correct. The only position that we're taking in this court is that that factor by itself is not a necessary condition, but it may be, in fact, a relevant factor in determining whether a belief is religious under the Free Exercise
Mr.
Clause.
Mr. French, how far does your theory take you? Suppose someone had a sincere religious belief that he shouldn't work at all Monday through Friday.
Well, I think that that would certainly
be different. Are
there any limits? There would certainly be differences in the example that you've posed from our case, firstly. But secondly, I would note that this court itself in Sherbert indicated that the denial in that case, or that there was no indication that by granting unemployment benefits, the claimant would be made an unproductive member of society. And I would submit that that's certainly an appropriate factor in determining whether there are, in fact, limits here. And that would come in, however, not in defining whether the belief is religious under the First Amendment, but rather in the government interest in denying the benefit in this particular case. And they have not.
The extent to which the state has a compelling interest?
That's correct. But the state in this case has not advanced such an argument as a justification for denying the benefits here to Mr. Frazee.
You would suppose the department gets up and say, no, we don't defend the decision below. We just want to support it on another ground. We wouldn't necessarily have to agree with either one of you that the court below erred. We'd still have to decide that it did.
That's correct, but I would submit that the grounds offered by the department in this case are not sufficient to sustain either the determination of the Board of Review or the Illinois Appellate Court. I think in either instance, the decision of that court, based on the findings that the agency itself made and the court made, necessarily must be overturned as a matter of construction under the Free Exercise Clause. What beliefs are protected under that clause and what beliefs are not? That's a constitutional question.
But the stipulation or agreement of the parties doesn't conclude this court on a question of law.
That's correct. That's correct. Now, just getting back briefly to what transpired in this case, as I mentioned, the Board of Review did, in fact, pass on a broad range of evidence that was before it, not just the transcript that was presented by Mr. Frazee. They had the two statements, and on the basis of that testimony, determined that his belief was not protected because he was not exercising a belief or tenet of a church or denomination. That was the sole ground given for the decision. When Mr. Frazee, when that decision was given, he filed a complaint then for administrative review in the Illinois Circuit Court, and that court affirmed the decision of the Board of Review. Mr. Frazee then appealed to the Illinois Appellate Court, and once again, that court had no problem determining either the sincerity of Mr. Frazee's belief or the religious nature of that belief. First of all, the court specifically stated, quote, we do not question the sincerity of plaintiff, end quote. Secondly, the court also discussed in detail the historic Christian practice against Sunday labor. So there's no question they were understanding that this was a belief based on religious conviction. And in fact, they termed Mr. Frazee's belief a personal professed religious belief. The sole ground for the rejection of Mr. Frazee's claim that the Illinois Appellate Court gave was that that court believed that the Constitution extended protection to individuals only, number one, when they're a member of an established religious organization, and number two, when they're exercising a tenet to that organization. That was the sole ground given by that court. Now, it must be emphasized that the Illinois court's understanding of the scope of the Free Exercise Clause is not isolated. Recently, four state courts in Vermont, New Jersey, Arkansas, and Indiana have rejected free exercise clause claims on very similar grounds to that advanced by the Illinois Appellate Court. But that court's understanding of the scope of the free exercise clause is inconsistent with important principles of the First Amendment. Firstly, on its face, the test grants an unconstitutional preference to establish religious organizations and disadvantages religious dissenters and adherents of emerging new sects. The court's test, by its own terms, makes protection for individual belief dependent on the acceptance of that belief by others. That's precisely what this court said in Thomas the Free Exercise Clause did not require. In addition, that the test would operate to create a de facto preference to certain religions that are highly organized and creedal. For instance, a Buddhist or a Hindu would not qualify for protection under this test, no matter what their beliefs they advanced, because neither Buddhism nor Hinduism, as a matter of fact, maintain a uniform body of practices or beliefs. So none of those claim adherence to those religions would qualify for protection under this test. In addition, the test requires the court to scrutinize both the individual religious belief and compare it to the tenets of established religious organization, and that would involve courts in questions of religious doctrine, which is what the First Amendment also does not permit. The test, by its own terms, requires courts to determine who members of established religious sects are, and also what is the relevant established religious organization. Both of those questions often involve issues of religious doctrine and would present the problem of excessive entanglement in religion. It appears that the Illinois Appellate Court believed that Sherbert, Thomas, and Hobby required that an individual be a member of an established sect in order to obtain the protection of the First Amendment. But that goes far beyond what this Court's holdings in those cases and other cases have required for a belief to qualify for protection under the First Amendment. Instead of requiring an individual to be a member of such a sect, what this Court has said in those cases is the only thing is required that the individual have an honest conviction that the work is forbidden by his religion. So in short, we have two requirements. First, that the belief is sincerely held by the individual, and secondly, that the belief must be rooted in religion as opposed to purely philosophical or secular concerns.
On this record, once it was established that he was sincere, could the state legitimately have probed further into the nature of the religious beliefs? Or must it, as a matter of law, simply have accepted his excuse as valid based on the testimony that's in this record?
I think it depends, Justice Kennedy, on what you mean by probe. They certainly could have ascertained properly what the basis of those beliefs are and what the beliefs themselves were. I think there's no problem with the court inquiring.
They could have supplemented and amplified the record in that regard.
That's correct.
Even once it was established or conceded that he was sincere?
That's correct, because I think you can distinguish for the purposes of the Free Exercise Clause, sincerity, number one, and secondly, the religious nature of a person's belief. I think they are...
He said it's because I'm a Christian. Isn't that enough?
I think it's enough in this case,
Well, what
yes.
purpose would be served by further probing?
Well, they could have... If they wanted to find out where he got the belief, for instance, to determine whether it's really wasn't an honest religious belief. I guess if they made the initial determination that he was sincere, and then in this case he said, I'm a Christian and am against Sunday labor, and they believed that he was sincere in that assertion, I think that would be sufficient on this record for him.
No, it's sufficient. Would there be any further justification under your view for inquiry?
Well, I don't think that a court or an agency would be precluded by the First Amendment from going further. But on the other hand, I don't think there'd be any need to. The only point in going further, there are only two relevant questions. First, the sincerity of the individual, and secondly, whether the belief itself is religious. If they ask just two or three questions, and from those questions they can ascertain that the belief is religious and the individual is sincere, I don't think they need to go further.
But what if he said he was not a Christian? He just said, I don't believe in Sunday work. I think it's wrong. I've always felt that way since I was a child.
Well, I don't think that would be sufficient. I mean, admittedly, we have here a record just based on the testimony. I mean, there's more than that in on this record. But if you have just a record where someone says, I'm against Sunday work, I wouldn't say that that's sufficient in and of itself to determine whether the belief
what
is based
just
on...
What if added to that that when he was a child, his guardian or one of his parents read him a passage from the Bible that's something about not working on the seventh day or something like that?
Well, it would depend on how he viewed the Bible, I would suppose.
That's the only thing. That's the only tenet he has, but he believes it very deeply that working on Sunday is wrong. He's always felt that way throughout his life. Never done any work on Sunday. And just because he thinks that is something of some fundamental importance.
I think that's a close question. If the court were to adopt a functional test of religion, in short, like in the Seeger case, that probably would be enough. That if the belief was important enough to an individual, that it occupied a place of central importance in his or her life.
Important enough so he never worked on Sunday. That's it.
Pardon?
It was important enough so that he never worked on Sunday.
Well, that, I think, would just depend on how
religion is defined. We don't know anything really more about this person's belief than that.
Yes, we do. We know, first of all, that he's relying on the fact that he is a Christian, number one. And number two, we know that he's basing it on his belief in his own personal reading of the Bible and relying on specific passages in the Decalogue and in Christ's example in the New Testament. Plus, what we have as corroborative evidence is the long history of Christian belief and practice, which the Illinois Appellate Court itself took note of. I think all those factors are more than sufficient to meet what I would consider a low threshold.
You're suggesting that it was a tenet of his religion not to work on Sunday.
No, I'm not suggesting. Well, not in the sense that the Illinois Appellate Court used the word tenet. The Illinois Appellate Court employed the term tenet in a formal sense, something formally adopted by a religious organization. In that sense, clearly it wasn't a tenet. And a tenet, if you define the word tenet in just an informal sense as a belief that a person possesses, then yes, it was a tenet of his religious belief. And I think that is sufficient on this record, what we have before the court, to determine that his belief was in fact religious.
Do you have to have the word Christian then?
Excuse me?
Do you have to have Christian?
Well, Justice Marshall, I would say that...
A man says, I'm a religious man. And I don't believe in working on Sunday. That's all I give you. Is that enough?
Well, that's a close case. I would say that probably not, unless you determine that he discusses further and talks about what he means.
No, in mind, that's all he said.
Well, I don't think on that statement alone, I wouldn't say that you would be able to determine either the place of the belief in the individual's life or where it was derived from.
Well, and the next one is, he says that, and he says also, I'm a Christian, and nothing else. Is that enough?
I'm religious and don't believe in work on Sunday, and I'm a Christian?
Yes.
Yes. And this.
So that the word Christian is the key word.
In this case, yes, it would be. I'm not saying that's a test across the board. If he said I'm a Christian and I want to...
That doesn't give you any problem with the other religions, does it?
No, not... Well, it would depend.
Well, it does to some people.
It would depend on the facts, Justice Marshall. I would suggest if he said I'm a Christian and therefore I believe in playing golf on Wednesday, I would say that that by itself would not be sufficient because there's no... There's no corroboration that that's ever been a religious belief that's been held by anyone in the history of Christianity. But we have much more than that here.
Conversely, if he'd said, I'm a Jew and I don't believe in working on Saturday, that would...
That's correct. That would be clearly analogous to the case we have before us. But if someone says, I'm a Wiccan, for instance, one of the cases cited by the department here, and therefore... I have to twiddle my thumbs. Well, then I would suggest that we would need more. But what we have here is a belief that has been recognized by this court in the McGowan case in 1961 as a religious belief. It's not something that anyone who has common knowledge on religion would question as a religious belief unless the sincerity of the claimant is being questioned. Then you'd have an issue, but
because
we don't have that.
It's a fairly standard religious belief for many people. What if he did say, though, you know, God has appeared to me and told me to play golf on Wednesdays, and I can't take any job that won't let me play golf on Wednesdays.
Well,
and I'm persuaded that this fellow is very sincere about it. Does the state have to set up its system so to allow him to play golf on Wednesdays?
I would say not on these facts. I mean, or not on that statement alone. He would have to show more to show that
He sincerely believes it, but put in whatever additional information you need to establish that he is sincere about that.
All right. It depends on what you mean by sincere. I mean, if you mean by sincere that he truly believes it to be a religious belief,
mm-hmm.
That's one question.
Yes.
Well, I think in that sense that conflates the issue of what is a religious belief with what is sincerity. And I would say that under the cases, although they're related, I think they're distinct. But if you employ it in the sense that you're using it, I would say that he then would probably still have to have more, although maybe not a lot more. The reason I say that is that...
Now, well, listen, what I'm getting at is, I agree with you totally, and indeed I think the other side may agree with you totally, that you can't require that the person be a member of an organized religion. But I wonder whether the kind of excuses that you allow the person to put forward do not have to be excuses that are within the range of things that not any particular organized religion, but at least some organized religion have.
Well, I think there are many. I think that's correct. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I think there are many factors that a court can look at to determine whether a belief is religious. And one of a number of factors could be whether specific religious denominations have formalized that religious belief in a formal creed of some sort.
So you say even if it doesn't go to sincerity, it can go to whether it's a religious belief.
That's correct. That's correct. But here, what we have in this case, the only question that we have is whether Mr. Frazee's belief was not so bizarre as to be clearly non-religious in motivation. And I would submit on this record, his belief clearly satisfies that standard. And I think I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very well, Mr. French. And Mr. Ruiz?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, in response to an issue raised by counsel, I would like to point out that it has been the consistent position of the State that this is a matter that relates strictly to the factual determination made by the courts below, as well as by the Board of Review throughout its administrative proceeding. The case does not involve the constitutional issue raised, but simply involves the issue of whether Mr. Frazee was properly denied his unemployment insurance benefits based on his refusal to accept suitable work, and whether that refusal was based on a personal desire not to work on Sunday or as part of a religious tenet that he held. The simple statement that he asserts, that I am a Christian, we assert is insufficient as a matter of a religious belief, as we understand it, and insufficient to trigger the protections of the Free Exercise Clause.
Opinion below, or just the judgment?
We assert that what the Court held below is correct and proper, and that is that based on the record, an administrative review that it had to uphold the decision below unless it found it against the manifest weight of the evidence.
Well, Didn't it say that this was a religious belief?
The administrative body?
No,
it did not.
The court.
The court did not at any time say that this was a religious belief. It did not question Mr. Frazee's sincerity, but I think it upheld the board's determination and the hearing referee's determination that his refusal to work was a matter of personal preference and not religious belief.
You don't think it decided on the basis that this was a religious belief, but that it wasn't shown to be a part of any ritual of a church?
It's our position that what the court did in talking about tenets and dogma was simply a way of dealing with the fact that it was dealing with a very scant record concerning Mr. Frazee's.
If we think the decision turned on the fact that it wasn't shown that this was part was a formal part of some church dogma. If we think the case turned on that, you would agree we should reverse, I guess.
No, that would not be our position.
What is your position about that?
Our position is, first of all, that we don't agree that that's what the holding
that.
Below is.
I know that.
Secondly, that this court, if it were to determine that this were in fact a matter of law and not a fact, could, under its de novo powers, review the entire record and make its own determination as to whether or not there was a denial of constitutional right. However, we would submit that even under that de novo review standard, first of all, there are not sufficient facts here to support the contention that the free exercise clause is violated.
Do you think it's the rule in cases like this that the asserted religious belief be shown to be a formal dogma of a particular church?
No, we do not. I don't think that is a proper statement of the law.
So isn't that what the court below ruled? I'm looking at its opinion, and it says the injunction against Sunday labor must be found in a tenet or dogma of an established religious sect. The plaintiff in this case does not profess to be a member of any such sect. Affirmed. I mean, it looks pretty clear, doesn't it?
Well, our reading of that language is simply dicta in the case because it was not determinative of the record that the court had before it.
And suppose I think that's not our reading of the case. Then do we reverse?
No, I don't think you need to reverse. You may still uphold.
In other words, we affirm a decision which is based on a patently erroneous statement of constitutional law.
It's not our position that the decision is patently in error.
Suppose we conclude that the decision is based on the sentence that Justice O'Connor read. And suppose further we conclude it's wrong. Then we must reverse.
Now, I think you can still uphold the determination that Mr.
Well, I'd
Frazee
like to hear why.
Pardon?
I'd like to hear why.
That Mr. Frazee was not entitled to benefits given the factual presentation he made to support his claim of religious
beliefs. Well, you want us to redetermine the facts.
I don't think you need to redetermine the facts. If you determine that the decision was wrongly decided by the appellate court, you may review the facts and make your own determination.
Well, why should we do that? We normally don't. We took it to decide an issue of law, the issue presented in the cert petition, and you apparently don't even want to talk about that issue.
Well, it's been our position consistently that that's not the issue that these facts present. We did it throughout the course.
I don't know whether you think that statement that Justice O'Connor read is a correct statement of constitutional law.
That you need to be a member of an organized religion and have penance and dogma?
Do you think that's a correct statement of the law?
In order to get constitutional protection? Absolutely not. Absolutely
not.
You, and I don't
so
think
you do not
the
defend that statement in the opinion?
No, we do
just
not
say,
believe
you
that
just say that wasn't
said.
The basis for the decision, or that even if it was, we can decide it another way?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The court below also said, in addition to what Justice O'Connor quoted, we do not question the sincerity of the plaintiff. You want us to decide this case on the basis of the fact that sincerity was not demonstrated when the court below was satisfied about sincerity?
We have, I think, conceded the point that this gentleman may have had some sincere beliefs. What we are unwilling to concede is whether he presented sufficient evidence to support his claim that on the basis of the record that he made, he could support a claim of a religious exemption.
You want us to do that for the first time, even though the state court didn't even do it?
I think the state court did do it by affirming the holding below that he was not entitled
to. The state court said we don't question the sincerity of the plaintiff.
No. We have conceded that nowhere along the line has his sincerity been questioned. Our contention is that there are not enough facts in this scant record to support the fact that he put forth a religious claim.
So your position really is, although his belief was sincere, it was not religiously based?
That's correct.
And the reason being?
Oh, the reason is because I think that under any sort of constitutional analysis to determine whether or not you have the protection of the Equal Protection Clause attaching, You need to look at what the assertions
what
are.
What has constitutional analysis got to do with right or wrong, yes or no?
This constitutional
doesn't have anything to do.
No, it does not. It does not.
Are you saying there was a failure of proof?
I think in this instance, he failed to prove that he had anything other than a personal belief, a personal preference. It could have been as sincere as the courts have pointed out that he was perhaps sincere. But the issue is that you cannot raise the claims, even though he asserts them, as being religious simply on the basis of his representation.
Even though he's sincere, he's not so.
He has not shown that what he has presented is a sincere religious belief.
What could he show?
What could he have shown?
Yes.
I think that he could have done any number of things to provide additional information.
I warn you in advance, my next question is be, did you show anything to the contrary? So go right ahead. Okay.
The things that he could have done, he was offered enough of an opportunity. If his particular religious orientation was not of the institutional variety, as has been indicated, then he could have taken the opportunity to expound more on where he got the religious direction for his life, how long he's had it, what kinds of practices
could
does he
do
in
that. Could you have asked him that question?
Pardon me, yeah?
Could you have asked him those questions on the cross?
I think...
of course you could.
An adversarial proceeding.
And you didn't.
This was not an adversarial proceeding, Your Honor, at the hearing level where the record was made. He was brought in to respond to the fact that his benefits were going to be discontinued. And he was asked for the reason for his refusal.
But that person who asked these other questions?
Well, he didn't.
He did say
in answer one of those questions, what's the basis? He said, my personal Christian faith in the Lord.
I think that was his response exactly.
And isn't that sufficient?
It is our position that it is not. Simply,
what more does one need than faith in the Lord and being a Christian and therefore thinking Sunday work is wrong?
And you don't question the sincerity of that either.
We do not question his sincerity simply because the record doesn't show that he was in any way insincere about it. Our position is that simply saying that I have these personal preferences or I have these preferences and then saying they're religious,
let him answer the question.
I'm sorry.
That they are religious doesn't make them so. That the person seeking the exemption, seeking the protection of the First Amendment, bears the responsibility of illustrating that what he holds and believes as his own is in fact what would be recognized under the free exercise clause. The fact of the matter is, the reality is, that the farther one gets away from what could easily be recognized as an identifiable religion, I think as a practical matter requires that individual illustrate more how those beliefs, that body of beliefs, not a single one, somehow is the controlling factor in his life and holds the same position as an orthodox belief in God would hold in someone else.
Mr. Ruiz, was this the argument that was made by the state to the Illinois Appellate Court, the argument you're making to us today? Or did the state simply argue that the board's decision should be affirmed?
The argument made at the state level was that the decision below should have been affirmed.
So we're hearing this entirely for the first time. It's something that wasn't presented below.
No, it was not.
I guess I'm still not sure what you're asking us to hold, Mr. Ruiz. If I understand what you're saying, a person can say, God does not want, I believe, I am a religious person, God does not want me to work on Sunday. And I can say, yes, you think that, and I'm sure you're sincere. And yet, I'm still not sure that that's a religious belief, right? Is that what you're asking us to believe?
Yeah, I think
believe?
That you can make the assumption that simply because someone says, I don't want to work on Sunday, and attaches a religious label to it, that immediately means that the fact finder...
But I don't question his sincerity. I acknowledge, yes, I understand that you believe that God does not want you to work on Sunday. That's what this court means when it says he doesn't question his sincerity. He says, God does not want me to work on Sunday. And the court says, yeah, I believe you believe that, but that's not a religious belief. Well, what more must you have to prove to...
Well, I think
show it's a religious belief, except that you think that God commands it, and you sincerely believe that. Once you've shown those two things, it seems to me you've established a religious belief, haven't you?
I think you've established a religious belief in Your Honor's example, but I don't think that's the set of facts we had here. I think that he was asked to identify either an organized religion, which he said there was not, or to identify something that we could look at and say, okay, this is comparable to what we would identify as a religious belief. I think the state in this instance has the right to make the determination as to the sincerity and also as to whether or not it is dealing with something religious. And simply having it labeled as a religion does not make it so. I think you need a lot more. That runs contrary to our notion that anyone can simply set up a set of standards and expect that society will know what those standards are under the label Christianity in this case, and then ask society to abide by one's wishes as to the exercise of that, whether or not it means society has to bestow benefits on it. I think that our notion of ordered liberty says that you can't do that, and that this court can't be asked to simply, on the basis of this record, provide the protection of the First Amendment.
Under your theory, and I'm still not quite sure how to articulate it, but under your theory, was the state required to deny the employment exemption?
Was the state?
Based on this record, was the state required to deny the application for benefits?
Simply on the basis of his religious beliefs?
On the basis
no.
of what's all that's in this record, if the hearing officer had granted the exemption, could you have taken him to your state court and had a reversal as a matter of law?
I think we probably could have done that because we would contend that it neither proves nor diminishes his record. He does not illustrate any sort of religious belief, and if the hearing officer had so found, I think that could have been reversed as well. It's our position that the history and purpose and intent of the Free Exercise Clause, if it's to be preserved, then we must undertake the rather delicate task of distinguishing between those things that are religious and those that are non-religious. The receipt of unemployment insurance benefits in Illinois is a conditional right and not an absolute right. The right to receive those is dependent upon the claimant, in this case Mr. Frazier, showing his initial eligibility for those benefits and a continuing eligibility. That burden was his from the beginning, and it continued to be his throughout the process. It never shifted. His decision to decline Sunday employment and thereby claim a religious exemption was dependent on his ability to demonstrate that the refusal was more than a sincere personal belief, that it was in fact religious. Simply labeling his preference as religious didn't make it so. At the hearing, as I had illustrated a little before, there were a number of attempts made to draw out the nature of his beliefs with very little information gathered. He was asked what his faith was. He simply said it was Christian. He asked what church he belonged to which he didn't respond. He asked if there were tenets of the church that prohibited. He said no, that just as a Christian, I feel it's wrong. When asked to add his own thoughts about the record, to add anything before the hearing was closed, he declined and simply left. I think that based on the evidence, there was nothing else that the hearing officer could do but to deny him his claim of benefits because he had simply declined an offer of suitable employment, and that he had failed to show that for either a religious reason or any other reason that the job was unsuitable for him.
All that sounds very good to me, but I think what you're questioning with that is his sincerity. I think what you're saying is this fellow, he didn't really belong to an organized religion. He didn't show he ever goes to church, but he comes in here and says, I've always felt it's wrong to go, you know, to work on Sunday because I'm a Christian. You want to question his sincerity, that's fine. But here you have a court that says, oh, no, I believe he's sincere, that he really believes that God doesn't want him to work on Sunday. But nonetheless, that's not a religious belief. I think once you admit he sincerely believes that God does not want him to work on Sunday, you have a religious belief. I don't know what more you have to prove.
Well, I think the attempt here that was made to try and point out whether he was a member of a religious organization, I think membership in an organization not only would point to the religious nature of the beliefs, but also to the sincerity. So I think it's a two-part thing. And I think that you can say, simply because someone sincerely holds a belief doesn't make it religious, and simply labeling the belief as religious also doesn't make it religious.
And the belief is thought by the individual holding it to be imposed by God. That does not necessarily make it religious.
If that is a religious belief, beyond simply saying that it's a religious belief, then you then look to the sincerity. Here we have a claim that was sincere. What we don't have is why was he told that? Where does this particular belief hold a place in his life? What activities would be proper? Religion is sort of measured against the standards of either beliefs, certain tenets that say certain conduct is proper, other is prohibited, other is better and worse or whatever. There is no explanation here of his declining to work on Sunday other than his single statement, I think it's wrong. Much of an explanation as to why he believes that. What place does he hold? How long has he held it? All these go to point to whether or not we're dealing with something that is really religious or whether it's something else.
I think they go to sincerity. I'm sorry. I guess I just cannot understand you. I think it seems to me you're questioning whether he's sincere.
I would apologize to Justice Scalia, but I think that the record here illustrates
that.
Well,
let's put it another way. What do you mean other than sincere? Other than sincere.
Another way to measure sincerity, or another
way? What are you arguing other than that he was not sincere?
Our argument is basically that whether or not one accepts the notion that he was sincere, which has not been brought into question, that this record fails to establish that there was a religious belief.
Not important. Are you saying sincerity is not important?
In measuring a religious belief, no, it is very important. I'm just saying that under these facts, sincerity was in question. But the sincerity of a personal belief is not the same as the sincerity of a religiously held belief. And that the courts below have not determined that on the record here we have sufficient evidence to support his claim of a religious belief.
First raised the sincerity point.
The sincerity point?
When was it first raised?
I think there was a determination at the Board of Review level saying, while we don't question his sincerity,
it was when it was first raised. And it was raised continually.
His sincerity?
Yes.
I think the Mr. Maze claimed
every
sincerity.
Place you lost.
Sincerity?
The sincerity point.
I think it was conceded.
You lost
throughout
at every step, didn't you? And now you want to get it here.
We have not raised the sincerity issue.
Well,
we have illustrated.
Why did the court below say that we don't doubt his sincerity?
The court below did say that they didn't doubt his sincerity. We did not raise it, no.
They just reached out there and grabbed it.
I think the court was making comments about his sincerity just in the same way that the court delved into the sort of historical evolution of the place that Sunday has historically. We're trying not to delve into that for the purpose of this argument. We would like to sort of take a moment and ask the court to consider the fact that this and other courts have, in a variety of contexts, undertaken the task of determining whether or not, given a particular set of facts, they were looking at a religious claim. Whether it was.
This court rarely does something like that when the lower courts have not tackled it. It seems to me that in your position, you would have confessed error on the point of law and asked that the case be remanded to the appellate court so that you could make this argument where it belongs, not here. I don't understand why you're making this argument to us.
Well, we raised before this court in our motion to dismiss the notion that given this set of facts, there was not a constitutional question that was raised. And we still believe that this court can support the holding below, and if it wishes, make a determination that the court erred in the way that it arrived at its determination as to constitutional question. I think that would be an appropriate holding if the court so wishes. We would suggest that applying several of the tests that this court and other courts have used to determine the presence or the existence of a religious belief, that it can be determined that in this particular set of facts, Mr. Frazee did not raise a claim that implicates the First Amendment. If the belief must be stated in a manner that can be objectively understood to be religious, what we have in this instance is Mr. Frazee claiming a mantle of Christianity and simply saying that he expects the finder of fact to make a determination that there's certain body of beliefs associated with that and that his sincerity as to those beliefs should go unquestioned. It's incumbent upon the fact finder in that instance to be presumed to have a certain body of knowledge as to what all of the rights, responsibilities, and duties of an adherent to Christianity are, and number one, what this particular individual holds as his own. Secondly, that the belief must be relevant to the purpose that it is invoked. All that we would suggest is that one recognizes that there are a variety of beliefs that may be suggested under the term Christianity. Not all sects to Christianity hold the Sabbath or the Sunday sacred. We must look to see whether or not this particular individual claims to have that as his important tenet of religion. Thirdly, and this is in response perhaps to something raised earlier, that if you don't have something that is identifiable as a religious organization familiar to the Judeo-Christian ethic, that you look at what place this body of beliefs holds in the life of this individual, whether it occupies a place that would be similar to the belief in God in someone else, and make a determination that there is a religious belief, even though it does not look like the familiar religions that we may be accustomed to seeing, thereby allowing minority religions to have the same even-handed treatment as majority religions. If the free exercise clause is to be preserved, then one must accept the notion that it is not self-executing. Those seeking free exercise protection are not burdened, nor their rights diminished if they are asked that they assert those rights in terms that are sufficiently clear and in a context consistent with their established purpose. What Frazee would like the fact finder to do in this instance on the basis of an insufficient record is to infer facts, assume beliefs, and then apply his subjective understanding to the terms, "I am a Christian." This result should be avoided. To do so would mean that it would deprive individuals who are entitled to First Amendment protection of that protection and wrongfully bestow it on others who would not qualify for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ruiz. Mr. French, do you have rebuttal? You have 2 minutes remaining.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Just briefly, first of all, the department's statement that the Illinois appellate court couldn't identify Mr. Frazee's beliefs as religious is just flatly erroneous. On page 790 of 512 Northeastern Reporter, the court specifically stated, "We have presented for determination in this appeal the question of whether the plaintiff's personal, professed, religious belief that he could not work on Sundays constituted good cause for his refusal of work." All they were doing was accepting the finding that began in the administrative agency, the very first finding that was made by the claims adjudicator that said Mr. Frazee would not accept work because of his religious convictions. This court doesn't need to make an independent review of
the board or agency, They argue in the appellate court to the effect that his belief must be represent a dogma of a particular church.
Yes, in fact, they did. In their brief, they cited the decision out of Arkansas that accorded in
which they now say is an erroneous statement of constitutional law.
That's correct. And I would just say that what the question of what is a religious belief is a hard question, but what the court does not have to define what is a religious belief in this case on this record. We're not presented with an issue on the periphery. On this record, we clearly have a religious belief. The Illinois Appellate Court made that determination. So did the agency. Therefore, all the court has to determine is whether, under the Free Exercise Clause, an individual has to have a belief of an established religious organization that's held as a tenant by that organization. I submit clearly under the Free Exercise Clause that's not required, and clearly the decision of the Illinois Appellate Court should be reversed and the case remanded to the Illinois Circuit Court for a determination of the amount of benefits owing to Mr. Frazee in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. French. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next to number 80.